Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Dr. Vincent Medici, Straight Talk on Health. And here we go. Put your seatbelts on. The end of the summer. It has occurred. This rain today is the fall rain. I hope we get tons of it. My summer brainstorm was to put six people who were chronically ill on property out in Ojai and be with them, spend time with them in lecture forum, educational forums, kind of like a health resort. And I did it on a very small scale this past summer. And what I learned is it's all about education. To stay with people who are sick, who are brave enough to get up every morning not knowing whether or not they're going to see that bright and sunny day again, is a real unbelievable process. All doctors should do this. But, I mean, be with your patient all day in seminar, lecture, forum. This is something that, I guess, because the way society organizes itself today, we're not doing anymore. And that's understandable. You know, the economics just, it makes this not really that easy to do. But I did it anyway this summer. And all the little things that you get to see that people go through in their minds, in their actions, all the things they miss in a healing is really where the healing is. So, you know, it leads me back once again to the same thing I keep thumping on, and that is the education. And you say things, you think people are understanding them because you're so comfortable with it yourself. You're using words so often that for 20, 30 years in your own health career, you're taking for granted, and you find once again that the people aren't really getting it deeply enough to make them activate. So it's easy to listen and to be entertained and understand, but when you really get it, you activate. And that's the difference between rhetoric, well, I shouldn't call it rhetoric, but more mechanistic types of dialogues and ones that really count. They get you to activate and to do. Now, because of that, I'm back on a topic I already discussed some 4.5 months ago, and that's the liver and the gallbladder. And I thought when I did that show, since it's so important, I'd do it first. And yet what I found, of course, is my point. And that is to really live with it. And to make it functional, you got to go in more deeply. So here's to today's show. We're going to go back into the liver and the gallbladder. And it's not a question. And again, this is the kind of dialogue you really want to attend, because it's not a question of whether you should do it. Whether you should really take care of the liver, flush the liver, go through the various liver and gallbladder cleanses. It's not a question of that. It's a question of everyone needs to do this. Everyone. There's liver. There's vitamin D. There's oxygen. There's love. There's faith. And there's liver. That's how big this is. And I think where we miss is when we really don't understand why people harp on this topic. Why do I constantly refer people to these enemas, to the flushes, to liver? That's what I want to get into a little bit more today. Okay? Now, first of all, whatever ache and pain you suffer from, whatever organ system, whether it's degeneration up in the brain, whether it's heart disease, whether it's renal issues, whether it's diabetes, you got to understand something, gang. All your organs, liver, spleen, stomach, intestines, kidneys, brain, your adrenal glands, your thymus glands, your ovaries, your testes, your bones, your bone marrow, your lymphatic system, your neurological system, any system in the body, if you take it out of a 10-year-old girl or a 10-year-old boy, if you pull out the tissue of a young person and you look at it under a microscope, so we're saying histologically, histology, H-I-S-T-O-L-O-G-Y, histology is the study of tissue, organ, under the microscope. What does it look like under a microscope, magnified 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times? Pathology is what does that same healthy organ look like if it's beginning to become pathological or diseased or degenerated. So we have histology, which we all take as early as our pre-med classes in college, which is the study of normal tissue. Pathology is the study of deranged tissue, diseased tissue. So when you have that scary moment where someone says, we need to biopsy your prostate gland or your breast tissue, we need to biopsy the liver, this is a moment where a pathologist who understands normal description or the normal look of a tissue, say like the liver, looks for disease or decay or fibrosis or scarring. And that's what we call the pathologist. So the pathologist does a biopsy. This is very important. And the reason is this. All tissue, from the tissues of your grandkids, from the tissues of 10-year-olds to 20-year-olds to 30-year-olds to 50-year-olds to 70-year-olds to 80-year-olds to 100-year-old people. All those tissues over time, if you did it like a movie and you looked at John Smith's liver tissue at 10 years old and then you looked at it at 20 years old and 30 years old and 40 years old, all the way to liver disease, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, cysts in the liver, this kind of thing. If you looked at those tissues every 10 years, you would see something changing in the tissue. Every decade, you'd look into that tissue and you'd say, you know, there's a sign there that the cell biologists use or the pathologists use that means that the tissue's starting to age. It's starting to decay a little. You don't have a disease. You don't even have a symptom. And pathologists do this. I do it with them. We talk about the degenerative process in the tissues of the organs before you even get a symptom, let alone a disease, but a symptom. And do you know, guys, this is the fascinating thing about getting into science so deeply. You can sit around on any given day, off the record, over a cup of coffee, and you can sit there and talk with your fellow pathologists about all the signs of the cell, of the organ, long before a person will ever get a symptom. And you can talk to them about the way those tissues look between the symptom and the beginning of the disease. And they know this. They identify it. They have words for it. But to make life easy, all of us would use the term fibrosis or scarring. So I'm going to introduce a term as it relates to why you need to take care of your liver. And that word is fibrosis or scarring. It's a generalized term. It's barely a scientific term, except scientists use it. And the amount of it in your cell, between your cells, is a sign that something's going in the wrong direction. Disease is fibrosis to the point where deep vital cell systems have broken down. But it begins with fibrosis. It begins with scarring. It begins with the deposition or the creation and laying down of gooey, gelatinous, fibrosis-producing tissues or scar tissues. Fibrin is something that the body makes that helps build what we call scar tissue, intracellularly and extracellularly. Now, the point. and why this is so vital for you to really get. When the liver functions, it functions as a vacuum cleaner. You know that. It's a filtration system. You know that. I'm sure you know that by now. Fantastic. The issue, though, is always in any given moment, the rate at which the liver removes poison from the blood is competed with by the fact that lots of that poison in the blood is going into little pockets in your organ systems, all of your organ systems, maybe even into the cells of those organs, and creating a mild inflammatory response by each and every organ system of your body, each and every second of the day. And this low-grade inflammatory response demands, it begins, it codes for the deposition of fibrin and other types of scar tissue around the cell and inside the cell. So there's a balance. So you think of a seesaw, and in the middle of that seesaw, right, when we were kids, you go up and the other one goes down, and we were fascinated by this seesaw. This balance then is between how fast can the liver suck all that poison out of the blood, and we'll get to where it goes in a minute. How fast can it suck all that poison out of the blood, and how fast, or is a lot of that poison in your blood going into the cell or around the cell and beginning a scarring inflammatory response? That balance drives your health. That balance between excretion of poison and fibrosis around the cell drives your balance, drives your health. If you were to take in poison and get it out as fast as you take it in, we would see the chronic disease rates plunge. They would plummet to next to nothing. It's obvious. Sure, it's obvious. We know these toxins are bad. Sure, we do. But let's get more involved here. 24/7, your cells are deluged with poison that you're breathing, eating, so on and so forth. And you've got that liver there pulling them out. If the liver were to function, if you had two livers, if your liver never degraded and never malfunctioned, we would see chronic disease plummet. So get that one in your head. Now, step two. If those poisons in conjunction with the scarring inside the cells, around the cells, if the body's given a long period of time to build up this scar tissue, it starts to go into another level of fibrosis. It's like cleaning a rug. If you just lay down dust on it, you can vacuum it and it all comes up. But if you leave those poisons, stains, so on and so forth, on that rug, and they get ground into the very matrix of the rug, little by little by little, you have very tough stains. Those very difficult stains now in the organ systems take simple fibrosis, simple scarring, to heavy scarring. And those heavy scars are tougher to get out. We could say, that as you fibrose, you start to granulate. You create a tough, sticky, granular, coagulated sorts of environments around and inside your cells. So we say the tissues fibrose all the way to the point of granulation. So there's your histologist or your pathologist now, and they're looking at these cells in the different organs over a period of years. You don't have a disease yet. You may not even have symptoms, or you may, but they're looking at it. If they did look at it, which they don't, unfortunately, but they could, but I do. But if you read the books, there are pathologists that really study it long before you get sick. And what we see is fibrosis go to granulation. Granulation is a tougher stain on the rug. We have words for these things. And then we take out the granulated tissue in a biopsy, and we see this inflammatory chemical. And we see that immune system cell that's just collapsed into a heap. And we saw all this trapped blood. And we see all this fibrotic matrix, connective tissues that the body makes to try to contain the inflammation. We see this big, mucky consistency to the organ that we biopsy. But guys, this is going on throughout your organs all the time. Yes, genes play a part. Sure they do. One person's brain stands up to the assault and their liver goes. Somebody else's liver stands up to the assault, but their cardiovascular system goes. Somebody else's cardiovascular system stands up to the assault. There's no heart disease in the family, but then they get bone marrow cancer. So yeah, genetics plays a role. So when your pathologist, the person that gives you the biopsy, says, yada, 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 you're okay, don't worry about it, Mr. Smith, that doesn't really mean that the tissue that was biopsied isn't scarred and fibrotic, densely granulated. They're not telling you that. Their job, and so this is no criticism to them, their job is to tell you when what they see under that microscope has jumped all the way into what they see as disease. Now, more internal systems to the cell are deranged, and we have the advent and the expression of disease. So maybe your genetics could hold up to this impending doom of fibrosis. And somebody else's didn't. And that's where the genetics does come into play. So you got to qualify the advice you're being given when a doctor says, well, it's your genes. Really, this was going to happen because it's your genes. This statement, guys, it needs to be interpreted. It's your genes that in the end are the last link. That's true. But there are all these other steps along the way that if those steps were canceled out, your genes, the negative effect of the gene, would never express. And we understand this today in the labs. It's called your epigenes. Epigenetic, your satellite genes around the central gene, can switch on and off on the basis of environment. Here's the whole foundation, the whole fundamental proof of preventative medicine is in epigenetics. And there, we talk about it. We talk about it in the labs. We talk about it in the research. It's everywhere now. It's a budding new field as of 5 to 10 years ago. But the point is that we've had for thousands and thousands and thousands of years advice from the Bible straight on telling people to cleanse. That a clean tissue is a godly tissue, is a spiritual tissue. So we've got to put this into a more activated form, because the truth is the fibrosis that the liver, if it's functioning, would otherwise remove from the tissue is really what drives your health. So before you get to a granulated state in your tissue, or if you're in a granulated state, if you're in a granulated fibrotic state in the tissue, if your organs are not diseased, but you just don't feel well, if you have any real concern for staying youthful well into your 80s and 90s, then you've got to turn around granulation and fibrosis. Now, here's the thing. And this is so fascinating to me. Your body's intelligence, the high intelligence of the body, and that is a spiritual thing to me. You hear me thump on this concept all the time. There is a spiritual intelligence given to us by God that watches all of this. And here's one very interesting expression. So I want you to get this. If you're sitting there now and you're asking yourself, is this me? And it is you. It's all of us. And your body wants to degranulate. Wants to degranulate, wants to reduce and get rid of fibrosis. If your brain, if your entire intelligence, we'll call it, starts to make that happen, but the fibrotic tissue has no place to go. It has no place to get out of the body. There's no way for it to leave you, even if it was broken down. If we went into your fibrotic kidney or your fibrotic brain and we squeezed it, we squeezed out all the scar tissue and it all hit the lymph and then hit the blood so it could go out of the body, but you didn't have the liver functional, the high intelligence of the body would shut the process down. Without a functional liver, and unless you've cleansed, that liver is not where it's supposed to be, my friends. Unless you've cleansed sufficiently, and we'll get into that in a moment, your high intelligence will not degranulate your tissues. It's common sense, right? If there's no place for that scar tissue, for that fibrotic granular material to go, then your body's not going to let it happen. It would kill you. We see this all the time with cancer. If you study the history of cancer, until Donald Kelly, and look his name up, Donald Kelly, until Max Gerson really taught successfully the liver, gallbladder, flush, and the coffee enema, their therapies, and they represented two of the finest, most statistically relevant therapies this century. It was Max Gerson and Donald Kelly. They're cancer cures. Look those names up, guys. Both of them failed in therapy until they learned to open up the liver and the gallbladder, until the coffee enema became popular, until the olive oil flush became popular. And the reason is that the minute those tumors started to dissolve, if the person couldn't get that toxic material out of the body, they went into hepatic coma and died. And this is how you lose your cancer patients. But this is how you lose everybody in the end. We say, you know what? There's an expression. In German medicine, there's an expression. No one dies of cancer. They die of renal failure and hepatic or liver failure. Did you know that? You don't die of cancer. The poisons from cancer overload your excretory systems, primarily liver and kidney. And when your liver can't take out what your liver is supposed to take out of the circulation, and when your kidney can't take out the water-soluble poisons that the kidney is supposed to take out of circulation, it poisons the brain, you go into coma, and that's how we lose people. And not just with cancer, serious disease. So this has been understood, my friends, from the beginning, that you had to keep that liver flowing. And we have proofs in the history of medicine of until those cleansing therapies through that organ systems were patent, were mastered by the patient. Until they were mastered by the patient, the therapies that cured cancer wouldn't even work. That's how Gerson brought the coffee enema into the United States. Coffee enema was evolved, believe it or not, on the Russian front during World War I. When back then, pre-pharmaceutical medicine, doctors were naturopaths. MDs were naturopaths. Everybody did things that we call quack medicine as respected medical doctors. This was before the Germans extracted from salicylic acid or from white willow bark salicin, which is the active component, turned it into aspirin, patented it, and that was the beginning of pharmaceuticals. Or it was one of the very big days for pharmaceutical medicine, the birth of it. But before that, and after that for quite a while, until really like the 30s and 40s, until the 40s when we mass-produced the antibiotic, pharmaceutical medicine was very much in its early stages. And again, this is not to knock pharmaceutical medicine. Not into that. I knock ignorance. Ignorance and naivete. When good, honest, smart people don't have the knowledge, this is what I criticize. But way back, 1920s and 30s, we were all doctors of natural medicine. And there you are on the Russian front in World War I in Germany, and you don't have water, and you've got people. You're a nurse, and your patients or your troops are bleeding to death. and they're coming back in deranged conditions, and somebody's got a fever from sepsis, meaning this individual, as the story goes. This is the history of the coffee enema. You've got a young man in bad shape, and he's got a high fever, and we always did what for fevers back then? We gave the patient, the child, the whoever, enemas. So they didn't have water. And they had a pot of coffee. So the nurse, being quick on her feet, does the enema with coffee instead of water, and notice that something comes out that she didn't expect. That's what Gerson resurrected in the 20s and created the coffee enema from. And before he did that, when people had fibrosed in their biliary ducts, before that point, his therapies for cancer didn't work. That's what more proof do we need? All these little stories get shoved under the rug, get thrown into the closet, get covered in irrelevant rhetoric. And there are all these pearls if you study the history of medicine and if you watch patients. And this was my point, watching people out on property day after day after day, you see all these little things that they miss, that you, my listeners, miss. Thus the importance of the education. So, liver, spleen, kidney, every organ system of the body, scarring, fibrosing, to the point where now you're symptomatic. Now perhaps we're at the early stage of disease, and you want to degranulate. If you were to degranulate and throw all that poison into the blood and it couldn't get out through the liver and the gallbladder, you're cooked. So your body won't let it happen. This is what is so paradoxical to me. How much money and time and energy and emotional energy do we spend on that symptom, that pain syndrome in your body? And what do we take for it? What herb will heal it? What can we do? What's the insight? What will kill it? All of this emphasis, and the body's got all these mechanisms. It's just waiting to turn your symptom into nothingness. But it needs a pathway. That pathway is from the blood to the liver. And the liver sucks it out, throws it into the bile ducts, into the gallbladder. The gallbladder squirts it into your small intestine, through your large intestine, and out into the toilet. From the suction cup of the liver into the bile ducts that go high up in the liver, all these little passageways. If you need the visuals, get on the computer. Why should I spend an extra 10 hours a week creating visuals on this? It doesn't make sense to me, and so I haven't done it. Do I need to do that? Do I need to spend all that time and money and energy to give you a visual? Get to the computer. I don't want to hear. Get your grandkids to show you how to use a computer. It will open up another world for you. So when I say liver, bile ducts, gallbladder, into the hepatic ducts, into the common bile ducts, through the sphincter of Oddi, into the duodenum of the small intestine, these poisons will go. Through 35 feet of small intestine, through peristaltic action, into the colon or the large intestine, and you'll get this big cramp in your gut, and all this yellow-green fluid will fly out of the end of you. And that's what you call biliary patency. It means the bile's flowing. It means you can begin then to degranulate. So, right, are you sleeping? Are you eating well? Are you doing all these things? But let's get involved more. Are you degranulating? Do you have biliary patency? Are you seeing the yellow-green stuff come out? I can just see your faces. You mean I have to look at my poop? That's disgusting. Okay, I'm going to tell you something. What's disgusting is when it's inside you and it's coming out your skin because it's not coming out the other end. That's disgusting. Try that one on for size. It's not disgusting to look at your feces. It's exciting that it doesn't smell anymore. it's exciting that you can get all this garbage out of your body. It's exciting that when you do a liver gallbladder flush or a coffee enema, that your neck gets loose, that you feel high, that your tendons get soft, that you can stretch and realign more deeply because you did the coffee enema. That's exciting. That's not gross. Gross is when you keep it all inside and you pretend it's not there. And yes, when it's coming out your breath, when we can see mild jaundice in your eye, when your face is yellow-green because all that hemolyzed red blood cell making the bilirubin will reflect into your skin, and that's a sign that your bile ducts are plugged, a la Chinese medicine. That's disgusting. So this is exciting. So when you do these enemas, look into the toilet. Look for the yellow-green fluid. Smell it. Don't say you don't know whether or not it's happening, because you will. When yellow-green fluid comes out of your body during a coffee enema, you'll know it because it will smell a certain way. And don't get frustrated either, because I have seen tons of people. They've had to do 20, 30, 40, 50 enemas before they opened up the bile ducts. That's right. It can take that long. Patience, but we don't have to go into that, right? We all know we have to be patient. We all know that if you're sitting on 60 years of fibrosis in your liver, if you've boosted it up for 10 or 15 or 20 or drugged it up for 10 or 20 years, and now it's 30 years ago that you did this, and so, hey, it's out of my system. Well, it is out in one sense. In another sense, it scarred your liver. If you're the rageful type, if you've been through phases of your life where things didn't go right and you had your temper tantrums for decades upon decade, if you've been ripped off in relationships, lots of people, fine people, beautiful people, loving people, have been through phases that can last a decade or two where their blood boiled with anger. And that will fibrose the liver in and of itself. So there's tons of reasons that liver's been fibrosed. If you're 50 or 60 or 70 years old, come on. You're going to do a coffee enema and it's all going to flow correctly? It doesn't work that way. Every now and then I see that happen for someone. Some people are just so ripe for the healing that they activate into it immediately. And there's that word again, activate into it. There's a difference between just doing something, guys, mechanistically or functionally, and activating into it. You see? You like this show. Some of you like this show. Because I get to you. I get to who you are. This is the inside track. This is what you don't hear enough of. You can't just read it out of a book. You can't just hear mechanism over a telephone or off a piece of paper or off a computer sheet. You've got to hear it deeply in the core of you. And if you're hearing this and it affects you, then you're hearing it in the core of you. That's what we call activation. Activation is how people heal in processes. That's what you look for. That's what we look for out in nature when we have groups of people and they come and they want to heal. The health farms, the sanitariums. That's a word that we don't use anymore. The turn of the century, Tilden, Benedict Lust, Harvey Kellogg. These were medical doctors and you went to a farm on property. Groups of people, 10, 20, 30. Doctors made a decent living. People got educated in community when we respected community. Now it's a quick trip to the doctor. 90 minutes if you're lucky. 5 minutes I hear more often than not. And everything's rushed. Patients come in all the time. And they always say that. Everybody's in a rush. Doesn't work that way. Activation demands environment. Activation demands education. Activation requires the virtues. the greatest of which is patience. So if that liver's got 50 years of fibrosis, you have to give this time. Now, you can call the order lines, 310-320-1132. Whatever you do to learn how to do a coffee enema or a gallbladder flush. I don't want to deal with that. That's not my role. You have unbelievable health resources out there. My role is to tell you how to activate. Like it could take 50 enemas, and you have to be patient. Get the book, The Great Gallbladder Flush by Moritz. A guy named Moritz. The Great Gallbladder Flush. Fantastic book. Layman's book. Easy to understand. Sky's the gallbladder liver olive oil flush king. Basically, you swallow olive oil, and olive oil is a fat. We know that, right? It's a good oil. And when it hits your intestines, the gallbladder starts contracting. It starts going crazy because it wants to throw all this toxic bile. Remember now, bile, that green stuff, it's got poison in it, but it's also an emulsifier of fat. So it's really a solution of bile. It's a mixture of pure bile and poison. So it comes out of your liver gallbladder into your intestines is a mixture of poison and things that digest fats, emulsifiers. And this combination, this bile solution, this mixture of fat, this mixture of bile and toxicity hits the olive oil and it breaks up the olive oil. It emulsifies the olive oil. So the olive oil is just a trickster. Anything will do that works, but we find that olive oil just works better. All fats trigger this. You don't have to do it with olive oil, but in the function of things, we found that olive oil works great. It initiates the biliary contraction. And so all the bile veins up in the liver and all the musculature of the gallbladder just starts pulsing and contracting and pushing all this sludge, everything from tiny little stones to sludge to granulated material to all sorts of junk, parasites, infections, the whole works. The whole biliary system starts to purge into the intestines. Now the brain is watching this and the brain is clapping and it says, bravo. So here's some help, and you have this massive series of bowel movements, to which then all sorts of different doctors and healers over the centuries have added little things to make it even more efficacious. So we add magnesium in, Epsom salts, we add turmeric, we add garlic, we add all these things that help activate the liver. But don't get lost in the details. It's the essences. And the essence, of course, is did you get bile? Are you seeing those little green balls? And lots of them, and lots more of them. And if you're not, study the process. And if you're not, call our place down in Santa Monica. And if you're not, read about it in books. Go to your healthcare practitioner. Ask whoever it might be, why am I not getting that effect? Put yourself to that. Activate into the process. So if you get the bile flowing, then you start degranulating. If you start degranulating, then your cells, the cells in your organs, look out into the environment and go, wow, we have a place to send all these granular fibrin produced tissues. We've got all these pieces of glue now that we have a place finally to send them, and you start freeing up the physiology of the cell. That is how it works. In layman's terms, that's how it works. And there's more than enough science behind that. Hard science, big words we don't have to get into. And you know what? It's reproducible. But what it's not is mechanistically linked to that specific disease process And this is where science fails us. They say, okay, show us exactly how the fibrosis, the early stage fibrosis in your brain, in the substantia nigra of your midbrain, started to set the course for Parkinson's disease. Show us how the amyloidosis, all right, the deposition of proteins, amyloid proteins in the brain, set the stage for Alzheimer's, and how that early stage of it would be affected by these coffee enemas or these cleanses. See, we don't have that research there. No one wants to pay anyone to do it. So we infer it, okay, in many different ways. And there are ways that should be respected. That's where all the technical hard science is. But to you, the audience, we sum it up simply as get the yellow-green fluid out of your body. Look into the toilet bowl. Do the olive oil flushes. Do the coffee enemas. Be patient with it. And when you start to get patency, you'll start to see the result. Then your body can start dumping its granular material out of the cell structures, out of the intercellular fluid, into the blood and out your body, and we can begin to regenerate. You can't rebuild the tissue independent of removing the dead tissue. This is why liver enzymes go up all the time when you really start cleaning the liver. Or people with mild degenerative conditions in the liver, like hepatitis, all the hepatitises, all the what we call cirrhosis or pre-cirrhotic conditions, that you'll measure a high SGOT, SGPT, GGTP, all these different liver enzymes go up when you have these liver diseases. And then when you clean the liver, they go up a little more and everybody flips out. It's because they don't understand really how cells regenerate. A cell will inflame as it heals. To move out the garbage between dying fibrotic cells, irregardless of where those cells are, liver, kidney, spleen, heart, brain, doesn't matter, bone marrow. To move out the fibrotic granular material so that you can regenerate will always create an inflammatory phase. So initially, you can see all sorts of blood markers go higher in the interest of, oh, well, this is making me worse. I've never seen hepatitis C cure without bringing up the liver enzymes temporarily. And this is in the literature if you read it from the doctors that really presented different powerful paradigms towards everything from healing cancer to cirrhosis of the liver to the autoimmune diseases. So science dances with natural medicine. Hard science dances with it. But we've been funded. We've been malfunded. No one's given the best minds enough money to go in and really do these things. It cost me a lot last summer to work with people out in nature and watch the difference between a 90-minute office visit, and actually weeks at a time on property. If you talk about goats to people, they're just animals that you see on the cartoon. But have you ever lived with a goat? Have you ever milked a goat? Have you ever put that milk into your mouth? Have you ever watched goat cream turn into something delectable or goat cheese? All these things we hear about, they're out there in nature, watching a body in nature heal. I tell the sickest of the sick sometimes, if it's affordable, to get out into the farms that are still left, get out into nature. We still have a United States Constitution protecting the right of people to have property. That hasn't been taken away. And if you have property, there are ways to have animals on that property. Now, you can't start a store, but you'd be amazed at what's out there. And it's a wonderful thing to watch people heal in nature. So if you think healing's eluded you, don't. Because there's an environment out there that you may demand and not know about to create that healing. Okay. Next topic with the time we have remaining. When your bile ducts get plugged and you can't get these poisons out, the liver will respond. The liver does 1,200 to 1,600 different functions. Just one of these functions is to get out the poison. It's got another 1,200 functions or so. The liver, once the liver's worked too hard, begins to inflame. Its cells, the hepatocyte. The hepatocyte that has the job of pulling poison in and taking it apart and then flushing it into the bile ducts, if that is just too overloaded with poison. And what do we mean by that? The poisons you eat, the poisons in the air, the poisons in the water, the poisons you put on your skin that get into the blood. Anything under any topic in health that comes down to poison, comes down to the liver's overloaded. And once the liver is overloaded, it inflames its own cells. So now we're just talking about the liver itself begins to inflame. That means the membrane of the hepatocyte begins to break down and little guts of it spill out in between the cells. And the immune system cells see this. They see the guts of the cell spilling out into the intercellular area. And this begins a inflammatory immunological, so a pro-inflammatory immune system response. And the liver heats up. In Chinese medicine, we say the liver is hot. Now, what does heat do? Well, if heat really continues, it turns to fire. So intense inflammatory stages in the liver begin to raise heat and fire. And that heat and fire takes on the expression of many symptoms. Your tinnituses, the ringing in the ears. All the eye problems. The retinal issues, the floaters in the eyes. You've got issues from liver heat creating blood pressure problems. The potential for strokes. That's liver heat. And if it's the liver fire, you can even see it in the tongue, where the tongue will turn red. If you stick the tongue out, the tongue will go crooked. Now, the liver does hundreds of things, and an inflamed liver will have certain expressions, certain symptoms will come out of it. But there's another thing that the liver does that's very central to physiology. Everything you digest, when your food is digested, it goes up via the portal vein into the liver. So there's a connection from your intestines up into that organ, the liver. So your liver is being fed by everything you eat. So the food goes down, it goes into the intestines, your digestive enzymes, remember HCl, bile, pancreatic enzyme, digest that food goes up through the portal vein into the liver. So the liver stores anything that it's made to store from your food. And we see, of course, we see this in nature. Animals, when they go after other animals, they take down, when a lion takes down a gazelle or a zebra, it pulls out the liver. Nature knows that the liver stores the vital nutrient. In Chinese medicine, we say the liver stores blood and disperses this blood throughout the circulation. We say the liver feeds the blood. So if the liver doesn't do what the liver is supposed to do, then your blood becomes deficient. We say you have liver blood deficiency. And that's a hell of a stretch. On the surface, it's a big stretch from Western medicine. But liver blood deficiency, when your eyes are dry, liver blood deficiency, when your tendons, a lot of stuff is beyond science. Why is it that when the blood is deficient and we have what we call liver blood deficiency, do your tendons ache? Do your hands and feet get really cold? That's liver blood deficiency. So when we go in and we assay the liver and we want to know, does the liver have a lot of stored vitamin D? Does it have vitamin E? Does it have vitamin A? Does it have its B vitamins? Does it have vitamin E? Does it have iron stored? All these things that the liver stores is a way to look at the liver. Have you eaten and digested to the point where the blood in the liver is rich? And so when you need it and you have to have reserve through your blood on a stressful day, is the liver there to support you? And if it's not, we see all sorts of issues. The floaters in the eye can have a lot to do with blood deficiency. Definitely tension in the musculoskeletal system. Dryness of the skin. Dryness of the eyes. Lightheadedness. Blood deficiency in the liver can create insomnia. We say, and then here's another jump, that the liver doesn't nourish the heart. Now, that's not hard Western science there, but that is a relationship between digestive issue, deficiency of blood in the liver, and the inability of the heart to rest at night, which is what you call a deep sleep. So if you're waking up repeatedly all night long for no reason whatsoever, and you are of the Vata, the slight constitution, because perhaps you're not eating enough or not digesting well, then you've got this portal vein from your intestines that's not getting any food to the liver. So the liver becomes blood deficient, and so it doesn't nourish the heart. And so instead of repose at night, sinking into the beautiful dark earth of sleep, you're up flying in the air still because you're starving. So the eastern liver can be blood deficient. It can be liver fire. You can just have a low-grade inflammatory liver. And here's another one, blood stasis. Blood stasis. The liver, because of the 1,200 functions, pulls a massive amount of blood through its big, strong, rich organ 24/7. And when the blood is not clean enough, it gets too thick. And once we have thickness of blood, as the liver becomes less and less capable of filtering the blood, and we slow down the rate at which the blood moves through every single cell of the body, we call it blood stasis. The tongue starts to get purple. Underneath the tongue, we'll see purple-blue distended veins. And the muscles will start to ache. Through the musculoskeletal system, we can see the result of blood stasis. Blood stasis is what we call fibromyalgia. Today, those muscles that just ache all the time, up in the shoulders, in the low back, in the legs, in your calves, we say, oh, that person might have clots in their body. Women that have clots during the menstrual cycle, all of this is suggestive of blood stasis. That's a very liver-oriented process. And if the blood gets thick, then the body has a drainage problem. So poisons build up because the blood's not draining because the blood's too thick. And those poisons inflame and create ache and pain. The liver with blood stasis. The liver with blood deficiency. The liver in heat conditions. In fire conditions. One of my favorites is liver chi stagnation. That's an important topic, liver stagnation, chi, liver energy stagnation. I'll take the last few minutes on this topic because it's another very creative, functional way. So we went into the first half of the show with science, and now we bring in energetics. And between hard science and energetics, between science as hard as we can get it to you and energetics, you get reality. Other systems of medicine don't talk science. Liver chi stagnation is meaningless to a pathologist, but it's the very essence of cure for many of you. And what is liver chi stagnation? I'll tell you what. when you're little, or you're not so little, and you're filled with dream and vision and what you're going to do and the contribution you're going to make and how wonderful your life's going to be. And you go out there and somebody tells you to take your dreams and your ideas and go stick them, because they're never going to come true, because you're a maniac and you don't have the right to a happy life, because whatever it is about you, it's just not going to work out, because you're never going to have your dreams come true. And people are told this all the time in different ways. We call that jealousy. I'd call it the devil. I'd call the moment that somebody tells you that your life can't go to that place that you, in the darkness of night, keep your breath alive with, I'd say that's demonic. But that's not the point. We all get hit from time to time with messages that tell us we can't be who we want to be, live how we want to live. When people respond to that from childhood or early teenage years, and it collapses them, when what really is a moment where they want to get angry and they want to stand up and scream and say, no, you will not take my dream away from me. When people experience that, but they internalize it, the internalization of your process, when something gets in your way, when you go into yourself, when you implode emotionally, when you keep it inside, you stagnate the energy through the liver. Direct relationship between the health of that organ and your ability to say, no, I'll get this because I want it. And I'm just as good as anybody else. And I'll have my day because I'm me and I want it. When you express your dream, when you express that dream, is the moment in which your liver cools down. And if for years you've collapsed internally, feeling that the burden was too great to bear, the liver heats up, and that's liver qi stagnation. And you can see that in the tongue. So get on those computers and look up liver qi stagnation, and you'll see hundreds of pictures of tongues. And stick your own tongue out and take a look. And that's how we do this. You take it from me, you take it to the computer, and together we'll take it to the world. Dr. Vincent Medici, Straight Talk on Health. Get to the website if you need to hear the show again at straighttalk.cc, straighttalk.cc. You guys have a wonderful week. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.